as a reminder, and I wanted to, I'm hoping to get this onto the site so the people who miss class tonight, if any, won't miss this reminder. As a reminder, this coming Saturday night at 8 p.m., we will be doing an online makeup class using Adobe Connect. I will be sending out a link to the course before that. I would ask that you click on the how to test your computer part of the link. Make sure that you've got whatever bits and pieces you need installed. If you would prefer, there are Adobe Connect applications for both Android and iOS, and for all I know, Windows Phone, I'm not sure. And so we will all be able to participate, those of you who can, with the makeup class, and I will be recording for those who cannot make it. Any questions? Okay. I've used Connect now for classes. I used it yesterday, actually. I was under the weather, and it is a really nice interface for that sort of thing. I will warn you that it is a two-way camera or a multi-point camera, so those of you who are participating, you may want to, either comb your hair or decide not to. I don't judge. Okay. What am I doing here? Stop that. So we are continuing our discussion of license agreements, and I want to thank all of you. Come on, computer. I want to thank all of you who sent me samples. So what I'd like to do, instead of making you necessarily stare at the screen and try to read the language, I think, if I've done this right, I have put all of the agreements I received into a Dropbox for all of you to call up on your own screen. So if you will be so kind, well, you're welcome to stare at the front, but if you'd like to see them a little more closely, you can go to ezor.org/licenses. That's the web address. No www, just ezor.org/licenses. And that should bring you to here. What I like to do is go through them. Did that work? Okay. So what I'd like to do is go through our licenses, find out a little bit about them from whomever it was who submitted it, and then look at them, and hopefully over the course of the next hour and 5 minutes, as we go through them, we will begin to see both similarities and differences. We'll begin to see whether license agreements tend to take the same tone, tend to have the same sections, which sections are important, which sections are standard, and what language do we see across and which language seems to be unique. And of course, all these contexts are not the same, so that will help to inform the language. So we're going to start with Apple Legal Licensed Application End User License Agreement. It wasn't a PDF. I think someone sent me a link and I made a PDF. Who sent the Apple end user license? You did. Where did you get it?
On the Apple.
Okay, what does it seem to have been for? What kind of license? What applications?
That you can download on your phone.
Okay, so is this for iOS apps for phones and tablets, or is this for Mac stuff? Okay, so this is a standard license from Apple for, was this its software or third-party software, to your knowledge?
It's
software. All right, so let's find out. Download. Oh, stop that. All right, so take a look at this. Come on. There we go. Okay, let's do some zooming in. Licensed application end user license agreement. All right. So let's start with who? Who are the who in this agreement? Well, take a look at the front first paragraph. What parties are identified in that first paragraph? Yeah.
Application provider and you.
Who is the application provider? What role does application, does the defined term application provider refer to? It's that word right next to it. The licensor. And you is capitalized, but you is it defined anywhere? One would think, usually when a term is capitalized in the middle of a sentence, you and your, so this seems to be talking about, that seems to be defined somewhere. Do you know where this was defined? Did this was this referring to another agreement? Okay. So, anyone ever see the Powerpuff Girls? Remember there was a villain called Him? Those of you who did might remember. So apparently we have a party called You. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean you or you. This could be defined, you never know. It could be, you know, the party legally known as Fred Muggs, you. There's no way to know. So right away we have a bit of a drafting issue. Where, in what context is this license presented? Is this a negotiated agreement? It is whatever the opposite of a negotiated agreement is. So, okay, so we have the who. What is the what? Also in the first paragraph. The licensed application. What rights are being licensed here? So the licensed application is the subject, but what is actually being licensed from that licensed application? That's the generic answer, but we have an actual license agreement in front of us. Take a look at the second paragraph.
The ability to use the license application?
Keep going. Well, maybe that's the how and the why, right? But, okay, so.
And then it limits it to a certain device.
All right, so, right, so then we have limitations. So what is being licensed is use. That, and what regime, what intellectual property regime or regimes might this licensed application fall under? What kind of intellectual property are we talking about?
Copyright.
Only? Could be patent. Excuse me. Thank you. Right, the rights to use. So it could be, it's likely mostly about copyright, but use is also one of the reserved rights under patents. Now, this is not a general use. We have lots and lots of limitations on that use. Where? Where is, does this license apply? Lots of different ways to parse the where. Right in the second paragraph, we have one part of the where.
It states that it applies only to the iPhone or iPod Touch.
That's not where it stopped. Yes.
That you own or control.
That you own or control. So right away, which device notably isn't here? These are not iPad licenses, at least not as drafted. Now maybe this is just for iPhone app, maybe this is an older version, it could be sloppy drafting, I don't know. Are there any, let's take a look through it, are there any other wares involved? Well, what about where it's not allowed to be put? You may not distribute or make the license application available over a network where it could be used by multiple devices at the same time. Now, it could be done over a network where it can only be used by one device, but not by multiple devices at the same time. Are there any other wares in here? Let's take a look. Oh, wait, I see some wares. Take a look at paragraph G. What does G say? And this is actually fairly typical for software. It's something you don't think about, but it may actually be required for software with certain elements to it, like encryption. What does G tell us about the where you are, you, I don't know what you say you are or you is. Depends on whether you is a proper name or not. Let's go with you are not allowed to use, export, or re-export. Where aren't you? What does it say? You may not use it.
You may not use it, and you may not use it on anyone on the U.S. Treasury Department's list, especially designated nationals.
Right. So it's there's. So here we have both a who and a where. There are places you are not permitted to use or export that particular iPhone app. So if you are going to Iran, Cuba, don't bring your iPhone. Because apparently just using the app is a violation of the license agreement. And you might want to hand your iPhone over to people or your iPod Touch, but you may want to check the list of specially designated nationals or denied persons list before you do. Because there are apparently people for whom it is not permissible to use an iPhone app. Also, you represent and warrant you are not located in any such country or on any such list. So you're not one of these people. Okay, so we also have another where. Look at section I. What does I tell us about the where? Actually, we have some H and I, some where stuff. What other geographical elements are there to this license?
State of California.
State of California what? So, does that mean you're only allowed to use it in California?
No, but if a suit has to be brought, governing law would be state
of California. Okay, what isn't here, interestingly enough, is venue. There's nothing in this agreement that requires that the case be brought in California courts.
But, they would have to use California.
But whatever court, right, assuming this term is enforceable, you would interpret you, the user, and the court would be required to interpret the terms of this license by how they work as a contract under the laws of the state of California. And you'll see this, excluding its conflicts of laws rules. Now why do they put that in? Because otherwise what you basically have is a circle. I'm in another court. I'm told to apply California law. But it's conflict of laws. Rules say I should apply my own law, but my own law says I'm supposed to apply California. So you always exclude the conflicts of laws rules. So you're, the substantive law of California informs how to understand this contract. Any other wares in terms of law and understanding and rights? Look just above there. A lot of abbreviations, CFRs, CFR. Anyone know what CFR stands for? The Code of Federal Regulations, good. Federal Regulations of what? Of the United States. Right, not the Federal Republic of Germany or... So, another where here is that not only are you looking at California contract law, but you're looking at U.S. copyright law and U.S. Export laws and other sorts of things. Anyone quickly pull up 48 CFR 2.101 to tell us what that particular section of the Code of Federal Regulations is all about? Excuse me.
2.101.
It says 48 CFR 2.101.
Definitions.
Okay, go up a level. What is this section of the Code of Federal Regulations talking about? What section is this? Let's see. Ah, say that again. So this is about the rules of how the U.S. government may acquire things. And you can see that this is, if the U.S. government is licensing this software, these rules apply. Federal contracting rules, federal acquisition rules. So that if U.S. government employee wants to use the software, he or she will know which part of the CFR to look at. By the way, as an aside, the fact that the government contracts with, specifically with Apple, has turned out to have some unintended consequences. You may have heard a few years ago, I think it was actually the last time I taught licensing, or one of the times I taught licensing, it came up. At the time, the terms of the iPhone, Apple, the App Store software development agreement, the contract terms under which a developer developed software for the iPhone and the iPod Touch were not public. Every developer who entered into a development agreement, one of the terms of that development agreement was a non-disclosure provision, so that none of those developers could disclose what the terms were. Except, some bright person realized that NASA had an iPhone app. NASA had developed its own iPhone app, which meant NASA had signed the iOS developers agreement. What do we know about government secrets of the non-national security type? We can request them. Freedom of Information Act. And in fact, I wonder if I can find it. go. It was actually the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Actually, I should go here, right? Go to the actual source. Let's credit where due. No. Go back. It's the world's slowest computer. No, it's not. I had the world's slowest computer. So back in March of 2010, where did you go? Back in March of 2010, the Electronic Frontier Foundation had this brainstorm and requested from NASA, with a FOIA request, the agreement it had entered into with Apple, and NASA said, oh, I guess we have to provide it, and the EFF published it. And that's how the world learned the terms of Apple's secret developers agreement. So the lawyer lesson here is that if you are, your client is working with the government, beware of relying on non-disclosure provisions in contracts. Because unless there is a national security reason or other statutory exception under FOIA, your client may have to disclose it to anyone. Just something to keep in mind. So we have the who, we have the what, we have the where. What's the when? Is there a term here? Oh wait, we have a termination. What does C say? The license is effective until terminated by you or application provider. Okay. Your rights under this license will terminate automatically without notice from the application provider if you fail to comply with any of the terms of this license. Upon termination of this license, you shall cease all use of the licensed application and destroy all copies, full or partial, of the licensed application. That is a poorly drafted provision. No offense to Apple's lawyers, but that is a poorly drafted provision because, first of all, we don't know what, it doesn't tell us what other rights, what other things might permit the termination. Is it for, by right, by, for convenience, is there notice? Ordinarily, you would want to have something there. I realize this is not so much of a context, but if your client is relying on the availability of a particular application for its business, you don't want that termination provision. But let's look at the obligation upon termination. Essentially, your client now must become a T-1000 or a Dalek. Destroy all copies. Doesn't say in your possession. Doesn't say on the device. It says destroy all copies, full or partial, of the licensed application. Read literally, that would obligate the licensee to walk around to iPhones, check, oh, you have it too, delete, and move along. This is a poorly drafted provision. Are there real consequences? No. Does it bother me? Yes. Because look at it. What does it say? Destroy all copies. That's clearly not what it meant, but that's what it says. Who, what, when, where, why? Why do you use, why is this license granted? Do we know? Well, this is interesting. One of the reasons why this license is granted, apparently, is so that the application provider can go ahead and collect data from the application. Look at paragraph B. agree that application provider may collect and use technical data and related information, including but not limited to technical information about your device, system and application software, and peripherals, that is gathered periodically to facilitate the provision of software updates, product support, and other services to you related to the license application. Application may use this information as long as it is in a form that does not personally identify you to improve its products or to provide services or technologies to you. So while your identity may not be legitimately taken, you are granting a whole lot of rights to taking information from the device. What kind of information? Well, it may not identify you, but it identifies your phone. And so there might be a record of all the places your phone has gone. This would be permitting it, collecting that information from the GPS. So it may not prove where you've gone, but it may prove where your phone has gone. Is that your phone?
Yes.
Has it been in your possession the whole time of the period in question?
Yes.
I show you Exhibit A, a record collected by the software developer of all the locations your phone has been. Do you see that?
Yes.
Is your testimony that your phone's been in your possession the whole time? Yes. Well, I guess you were in those places, weren't you? It's a bit of a stretch, but do you necessarily think when you install an app that you're authorizing the app developer to collect information about your device and from your device?
Oh,
well, there it is. Why else might the license be being granted? Why do developers do what they do so well? Why do some developers do what they do so well? To make money, either in the sale of the license or in-app purchases, but hopefully not to children, because then you have to have a big lawsuit and Apple has to pay a lot of money back. There are lots of reasons why developers grant these licenses. Why do you need a reason? Why does the developer need to get anything out of this situation? First principles, folks. What is this thing trying to be? This license thing. What is it?
Contract.
It's a contract. Think back, first principles. What do contracts require in order to be enforceable?
Consideration.
Somewhere in this draft, in this license agreement, there has to be consideration, or it's not enforceable. And I'm not suggesting necessarily that there is or is not consideration. When I'm making this point, though, so that when you draft agreements, you don't forget it. And believe me, it's very easy, especially if there are other things involved. It's not an arm's length transaction. It's two affiliated parties that are doing things together, and they decide, well, to make sure that it all looks appropriate, we're going to draft a contract. We don't really need it because we're basically doing business with ourselves, but we're going to formalize this situation in a contract. Well, there may not be any money changing hands. There may literally be one person doing the thing to and with him or herself. Wholly owned subsidiaries, people in the same roles. You don't know. But if you're their lawyer and you haven't put some form of consideration into that agreement, it's a waste of time. It's not an enforceable contract. So you want to make sure that as you're doing all the other bits and pieces of licenses, you don't forget the basics. Offer acceptance, consideration, stuff like that there. Okay. So, what else do we see here? What other things does this agreement do besides simply grant the license? Well, licenses, any contract, should be a risk management instrument. It should be something that defines risks and allocates them to one party or the other. Ideally, in sort of law and economics terms, to the party that is able to reduce the risk at the lower cost. Put the burden on the party that would find it easiest to bear. And we'll get into some of that later on in the semester. But look at all the other things here. All the disclaimers. All the ways that the developer is basically saying, that thing, we're not responsible for it, and you agree we're not responsible for it. Certain services may have third-party materials. By using the services, you acknowledge and agree the application provider is not responsible for examining or evaluating content accuracy, completeness, timeliness, validity, copyright compliance, legality, decency, quality, or any other aspect of such third-party materials or websites. Disclaim, disclaim. Before executing any securities transactions based upon information obtained through the services, you should consult with a financial professional. Your void where prohibited, your mileage may vary. Kids, ask your parents before entering. Whatever it's going to say. Lots and lots of disclaimers. Then you think back to your sales class, and even though this is not the sale of goods, you have equivalent issues. You have possibilities of implied warranties. So let's carve those out. No warranty. You expressly acknowledge and agree that the use of the license application is at your sole risk. So if it explodes in your hand, your problem. And that the entire risk as to satisfactory quality, performance, accuracy, and effort is with you. To the maximum extent permitted by applicable law, the licensed application and services are provided as is and as available with all foreign faults and without warranty of any kind. An application provider hereby disclaims all warranties and conditions with respect to the licensed application and any services either expressed, implied, or statutory, including but not limited to the implied warranties and or conditions of merchantability, of satisfactory quality of fit or fitness, of fitness for a particular purpose, of accuracy, of quiet enjoyment, how nice, and non-infringement of third-party rights. Application provider does not warrant against interference with your enjoyment of a licensing. Basically, you may be very unhappy. This may be very infringing. And if these terms are enforceable, not our problem. I love the end. Some jurisdictions do not allow the exclusion of implied warranties or limitations on applicable statutory rights of a consumer, so the above exclusion and limitations may not apply to you. Now we have a limitation on liability as well. These are the essence of a non-negotiated agreement. Not so they won't be in negotiated agreements, but they don't usually survive to this one-sided an extent. So here we have these terms. There is something else missing here. How does the licensee indicate consent? There's no signature line. Nope, no signature line. When you found this, did it say how you indicate when how you agree to these and when? Well, it might be. Might be a click wrap, shrink wrap. Now, the shrink wrap out of the license, the actual term came from literally shrink wrap. And the earliest form of software licenses for off-the-shelf software often were in the box. And they would say, by opening this box, you hereby agree to the terms. And at some point, somebody pointed out to the court, you know, it's really hard to say that we've agreed to terms before we even get to see the terms. Court said, you know, that's right. So we're not going to enforce licenses that were in the box or on the disk that say, by loading this disk, you're sort of caught. So then, I mean, look at, if you buy a copy of software, the license is on the back. Why is the license on the back? So that you can't argue you never got to see it before you decided. And if you open the package, not just rip the shrink wrap, but if maybe it depends on the terms, right? You have agreed. So here, it may be that if this is an app, by clicking download, you agree to these license terms. Click here to read them first. Nobody ever does. Download, that's your indication of consent. It's not here in the terms. Because this is not an agreement that is signed. These are terms that plug into whatever the mechanism is for acceptance. Okay. What else we have here? Let's try to go to a different context. We have lots of software. Oh, you took the time to type this in, so we have to take a look at this. Yes, I know. Let me download everything, please. I put it there. So tell us, this is, I think, yours, right? Tell us about where you got these licenses. Oh, so these are video game licenses, okay.
Some of them came from online, and two of them were inside the system boxes. Did I actually have those up? I don't even know if I have those up.
Do you have, is the Atari one here?
I didn't have the Atari one because it was bizarre. But I can tell you about it. The Atari one was...
So this was, just to give you a sense, because... We totally missed an opportunity. You brought in last class the original Atari game cartridge from an Atari 2600, which was very cool. And you guys would have, most of you, no idea what I'm talking about. But anyway, and so this was, you know, 1979's hottest game system, and it had little cartridges, with lots of blocky graphics. But there was software, and you had a license. So what were the licensing terms for an Atari cartridge?
Basically, it was two pages of what the warranty is. It was a 90-day warranty that you, in order to claim the warranty, before you can even try to claim the warranty, you first had to send this little green card and mail it to them.
Okay, so that wasn't the license. That was entitlement to service.
Yeah, but it was all put under there as if it was supposed to be, and there was really nothing about
okay.
Because
well, in a sense, it makes a lot of sense because consider, unlike an app, certainly unlike a disk, that was not, especially in 1979, there was nothing you could do with that intellectual property except put it into the system for which it was designed. It wasn't compatible with anything else. Yes, but what did I say? 1979, right? When that software came out, there was nothing you could do with it as a consumer. You couldn't read it. You couldn't get the code off the cartridge with any commercially easily available devices. You couldn't modify it. You couldn't run it on anything other than the equipment for which it was designed. And so there was essentially an implied license. You use it, in the way that the only way you can. Any other use is both impossible and probably not permitted, but they didn't have to tell you that because there was no other use for the intellectual property. Could you use the cartridge as a coaster? Sure, but that's not the IP usage. Okay, so what do we have here? So we have Nintendo. Now, what is this? These are not actually licenses. These are just the warnings.
Some of them led to other things.
Okay, so this Nintendo leads to this. And this is legal information, okay? So this is about using this software other than in the Nintendo device, or other than as Nintendo wants you to use it. So this isn't actually a license. Interestingly enough, this is an intellectual property education. Isn't it okay to download Nintendo's ROMs? Those are read-only memories. Those are the game's code. For games that are no longer distributed in the stores or commercially exploited, aren't they considered public domain? No! The current availability of a game in stores is irrelevant as to its copyright status. True. Copyrights do not enter the public domain just because they are no longer commercially exploited or widely available. Therefore, the copyrights of games are valid even if the games are not found on store shelves, and using, copying, and or distributing those games is a copyright infringement. Haven't the copyrights for old games expired? U.S. copyright laws state the copyrights owned by corporations are valid for 75 years from the date of first publication. Because video games have been around for less than 3 decades, the copyrights of all video games will not expire for many decades to come, you silly person. That's sort of implied here. So that was the, okay. So why do you think, so Kingdom Hearts says not only is the product protected, but so is the manual and the documentation. You have a license for the manual too. Okay. Well, again, why do you think that that game system cartridges don't hand you a lot of software license terms? Same reason Atari didn't. You buy a cartridge for a DS or a 3DS or a 2DS if you know you've kids have lost your 3DS and you're not willing to buy another one, or whatever. It hasn't happened to us yet, but that's the thread. There's, by and large, only one way to use it in the authorized system. Now, Nintendo obviously knows that's not the only way to use it. And it takes the time not to tell you the license, the authorized license terms, which are fairly straightforward. Here's your cartridge, here's your system, but what you're not allowed to do with it. So hard to compare this to license to the other license in structure, but it really does tell you where the company's concerns are. It's not about infringement. It's not about use in other countries in the same way. Probably because it's very simple. There aren't going to be encryption technologies or those sorts of things like financial software or other things might have on an iPhone. So, and also notice here, copying of any video game for any Nintendo system is illegal and strictly prohibited by IP laws. Backup or archival copies are not authorized and are not necessary to protect your software. Violators will be prosecuted. This video game is not designed for use with any unauthorized copying device or any other unlicensed accessory. Use of any such device will what? Invalidate your Nintendo product warranty. There's your remedy. It's not an infringement remedy. They've already said that, but they will also use their contract remedies if they determine you have done that. Now, I will say, Nintendo specifically, see where it says their backup or archival copies are not authorized and are not necessary to protect your software? Yeah, but. I don't know if any of you had to replace a Wii. You're laughing. Did you have to replace your Nintendo Wii? Did you have downloadable content or games on your little memory card? And what happened when you took the memory card of the software you paid for from one system you had purchased to another official system and you put it in? You didn't actually have to, but that's what it told you at first. In order to reduce the possibility of shared content and shared software, because you could download and put on a memory card, Nintendo, we all discovered, coded within all those downloadable files the identifier of the actual equipment it was first run on. That machine, whatever its unique serial number or identifier was. So you wouldn't, in theory, copy the memory card and hand it off. Great. But for those of us whose first Wii unit died, and we bought another one from Nintendo, and same Nintendo account, it didn't work. Now, you took the simple way out. I was a little bit miffed because it just wasn't right, and I escalated to Nintendo product support. And ultimately, I got Nintendo to transfer all of our content to the new machine. But it was not automatic. So from a licensee perspective, that doesn't seem right. But it was permitted under the license. It was permitted. Again, lawyer lesson. If your client may have to move between machines or otherwise go from one use to another use, make sure that the contract permits that. And if, unlike what Nintendo says, if your client does need to back things up and maybe more than one backup copy, make sure that the license doesn't prohibit that. Many times software licenses, for example, will say, you are entitled to make a single backup copy. To which you respond on behalf of your client, well, except we have backup systems and we keep an entire series of backup tapes. So we will have 150 backup copies for the last 150 days of backup. And we need to make sure we're not violating a contract just because of our backup system. And you negotiate the terms if you can. But you have to think about those things. Okay, good. All right, what else do we have? We did sports last time, just a little bit with the photos. Let's do some music. Who brought the ASCAP license? Tell us about where and how and where you got this and what you know about it.
I just got it from Wassila.
Okay.
And I think what's going on here is that...
So remember, let's remind ourselves, ASCAP is one of the major rights agencies on behalf of music publishers that grants licenses for the use of compositions. The songs, not the recordings. This has nothing to do with the rights to use a particular recording of a song. This is about the rights to use the song as a composition. And those rights have existed in copyright much longer than have the copyright protections for recordings. The recording protections came about in the 70s. The composition came about 100 years before, and probably longer than that. But the idea that music as a written form, like a book, would be protected is a solidly historical part of copyright law, and so the composer or the publisher by contract, and then ultimately through agency agreements and the like, ASCAP on behalf of its members has the right to license the compositions. So we have the Who's, right? Who are our Who's here?
ASCAP and whoever the licensee is.
Right, whoever the licensee is, and this is the general agreement. Say you got it from Westlaw. What did you search for?
License agreements under forms.
Oh, so this wasn't from a case. This was part of Westlaw's
forms,
secondary materials, whatever it is. Okay, good. This appears to be ASCAP's form. Now, we will look at other sources for licenses and some of the tricky bits. But yeah, let's start with one really important question. Assuming this is ASCAP's form, what do we know about the balance of rights in this agreement? Which of the two parties do they likely favor? ASCAP. This is drafted, if we assume that, by ASCAP's lawyers. And so there may be concessions possible within this agreement after negotiation that don't exist here yet. So, and I will return to this point. Lawyer tip, you're looking for a form agreement, license agreement, from which to start drafting something on behalf of your client. If your client is the licensee, this is not a good place to start, because you are essentially starting, having negotiated hypothetically away, a lot of rights. You want to start, or at least be aware of, where licensees start. You know, this end of the spectrum. You may end up here, but you don't want to start here and then have to fight your way back from your own draft. You're not going to get anywhere. So, important point about precedents, about forms, about examples on which you're basing your own drafting. Remember from where in the deal it came. Is it pre-negotiation? Is it post-negotiation? What do we know about whose rights are stronger here? So let's assume, from what it seems, this is the form agreement with which ASCAP starts. What is being licensed?
I think it's the permission to play this rendition for it to be transmitted to who's ever calling the licensee.
Okay, wait, hold on a second. So one thing that we have is... right, non-dramatic renditions of the separate musical compositions now or hereafter during the term hereof in the repertory, could that be repertoire, of society, and of which society shall have the right to license such performing rights. What does the defined term society refer?
ASCAP.
Now, what you need to know in order to understand that rather convoluted phrase is that ASCAP usually, in many of its deals anyway, doesn't license a song. They license all of their songs, or a large chunk. It's called a blanket license. You license the catalog. And that's what's happening here. This license appears to cover every composition over which ASCAP has authority. Great. Now I don't have to go one by one. So that is what's being licensed here. The right to do a non-dramatic rendition, not a stage production, of the composition. So this is not giving the right to duplicate the sheet music. That's a different set of rights. This is giving a right to turn the sheet music into a musical performance, a non-dramatic musical performance. Okay. But not all non-dramatic musical performances. This is very specific.
It defines telephone music service as.
It's a telephone music service. This, folks, is a hold music license. Or it could be a ringback service, depending on how you read it. But this is a hold music license. You may not have realized that when you're listening, hold on for a minute. Da, 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 da. That performance must be licensed. It's a public performance. And if they're using a radio station, they probably have not licensed it. Now, it doesn't mean that all hold music must be licensed. And I have a friend who is in-house counsel, or was in-house counsel, at a rather large corporation here on Long Island. And he told the story of how he got a call from, I think it was a lawyer from ASCAP, or BMI, or one of those, demanding that his corporation pay up for its hold music. Basically, the lawyer called, asked to be transferred, was put on hold. Oh, look, there's music, and then made the demand. To which my friend, the lawyer, responded that he knew for a fact that ASCAP did not have the right to demand a license because he, the lawyer for the company, had negotiated with the composer to custom write hold music for the corporation. Go away, ASCAP. So, but generally speaking, and that is where a lot of revenue from the organization comes. It's not from the obvious stuff, it's from the less obvious stuff. And this is hold music licenses. Your client, if its music system plays music, if its telephone system plays music, must have a license to perform that music. If it's Muzak, you know, there are a lot of different, that of course is a rather obsolete trademark. But that's what this is. Very specific license, very specific rights. Okay, so here are limitations on the license. Now remember the limitations on the software license. You weren't allowed to put it on a network. You weren't allowed to bring it to Cuba, right? You weren't allowed to do a lot of things relating to software. What aren't you allowed to do with a composition? Well, let's see. So we have similar categories, the limitations, but the limitations themselves are very different. The license itself is not assignable or transferable, absent certain things. Does not authorize the broadcasting or transmission by wire or otherwise of renditions of musical compositions in the society's repertory other than by means of licensee's telephone music service. So you're not allowed, once you have your hold music license, to turn it into hold music radio and send it out there. Limited to non-dramatic performances and does not authorize any dramatic performance of the separate musical. So this doesn't give you the right to put on a show. Nor does it extend to or include the public performance by telephone transmission or otherwise of any rendition of, et cetera. So you're not allowed to use the official cast album version of the song. And you're not allowed to sublicense. Or allowed to let a caller put it on really loud speakerphone and entertain a party. That's what it says. Authorizing any caller of licensee to perform publicly or reproduce the same in any manner. Now here we have a section, here's your consideration, and it says so. In consideration, no question there, of the license granted herein, licensee agrees to pay society at the annual rate of $4,171 for the calendar year 1991. Now you have a better sense of why this is referring to telephonic things and hold music, because that's when it comes from, 23 years ago. Payable in 12 equal monthly installments, each due on or before the first day of the each month during the term hereof. Now, what that doesn't say is whether it's in advance or in arrears. Do you pay beginning of the month before you use it or after? Again, you drafting, it should be more clear. You do want to tell which end of the month, advance or in arrears, the payment is due. Doesn't really say so. Okay, we've got an increase in the fees, their taxes, rights to terminate on breach, but you could also terminate on 30 days notice prior to the end of the initial term or any renewal. Interference in society's operation. In the event of any major interference with the operations of society in the state in which the licensee is located, by reason of any law of such state or any substantial increase in the cost to society of operating in such state, which is applicable to the licensing of performing rights, society shall have the right to terminate this agreement forthwith by written notice and shall refund to licensee any unburdened license fees paid in advance. What is that all about? What is that all about? We certainly didn't see that in the software licenses, the photo license that we looked at. What is that? It's not just taking on a burden, it's being burdened with something. Copyright law changes, right? Suddenly they don't have the ability to protect the use of compositions or whatever. It's no longer profitable for them to do this deal. They get to leave immediately. At least they, so one would think that there was something going on at the time or they had been through this, because that's not just a sort of a standard business term. Okay, here again, we don't have venue for disputes, but we do have the laws of the state of New York. So what I'd like to have you do, and we hope, were you all able to get the book or order the book? And it's on its way, winging its way in a big brown box? Good. So the syllabus is up. There is an assignment. Sort of that initial discussion assignment, the business of licensing, will be the topic we discuss. Stand clear of the closing doors, please. That will be the topic that we discuss in our online class on Saturday, and I think Monday we begin on the syllabus, and I think the first topic is patents, is that right? As I said, there's a lot to read, and I fully expect you to skim particularly the cases, but I want you to make sure that you've gleaned the important facts, the notes, the bullet points, and that you have completed the reading ideally by Monday, even if we will be discussing it on Monday and Wednesday. Any questions, thoughts, comments? Good. All right. Have a good night.